On this episode, we cover obstructive sleep apnea and its aeromedical implications. Grounded for good, or just a small pebble in the shoe in the flight journey ahead? All on the Mayo Clinic Clear Approach Podcast, your home for aeromedical information that matters. Along with Mitch Nelson, I'm Clay Cole, your medical co-pilots coming to you from Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, where the pattern is clear, the wings are all level, and the AMEs are all above average. We often get calls from pilots who have been diagnosed with snoring, some who have apneas or stop breathing episodes and are diagnosed with obstructive sleep apnea. As with many medical conditions, there often are many questions that come up, not only clinically in terms of whether a diagnosis is correct or the treatment is most appropriate for that particular condition, but also how a diagnosis of sleep apnea will affect one's ability to hold a medical certificate. Historically, this has come full circle. From one end of the spectrum, when the FAA had proposed heavy scrutiny on who would need to be tested and what parameters would need to be met, to the situation where we find ourselves today, in which pilots will not necessarily be grounded at all, but instead, a much more interactive approach exists, with the aviation medical examiner being allowed by the FAA to provide education on risk factors, appropriate testing when needed, and if one is actually diagnosed with obstructive sleep apnea, simple compliance with recommended therapies, such as use of positive airway pressure. For many pilots, a correct diagnosis is often life-changing. Not only is sleep quality and length of sleep often improved markedly in many pilots, appropriate treatment often results in improved emotional outlook, improved stamina, and more robust cognitive abilities. You know, this episode is focused on speaking to an expert focused on sleep-related disordered breathing and all its related downstream health effects. And then we'll look at the specifics of aeromedical certification for those aviators actually diagnosed with the condition.
Welcome back to the Mayo Clinic Clear Approach Podcast. I'm Mitch Nelson, and with me today is Dr. Eric Olson. He is the chair of the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine, with a focus on sleep disorders and interstitial lung disease. Dr. Olson, welcome to the podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about your background, and how long have you been at Mayo Clinic?
Hello, Mitch. I'm originally born in Minneapolis and arrived at Mayo Clinic in 1992 and did 4 years of specialty training before joining the staff in 1996. And I've been at Mayo for my entire career.
Well, that's great. And I know you see a lot of pilots that we refer over to your section, and occasionally pilots have obstructive sleep apnea, or in this podcast, we may mention it as OSA. Why is this important to pilots?
So obstructive sleep apnea is important to the entire population for its cardiovascular and metabolic consequences. From the pilot standpoint, it's also relevant because there are neurobehavioral consequences. And by that, I mean there can be issues with attention, concentration, and executive functioning that may be altered if you have sleep-disordered breathing.
And how is OSA, or sleep apnea, diagnosed?
So sleep apnea is diagnosed by catching it in action, and that can either be done in the context of what's called a polysomnogram, which is a sleep study that's done within a laboratory. More and more, sleep apnea is being diagnosed by at-home testing kits that are basically abbreviated versions of what we do in the sleep laboratory. So we have lab-based options and home-based options to diagnose the condition.
And what can a pilot expect when they have a sleep study, say, at the clinic versus what are they going to take home?
A sleep study in the clinic is a whole night affair. You come to the sleep laboratory in the early evening, and a variety of sensors are placed, raised basically from head to midsection, that allow us to get a detailed assessment of sleep and breathing during sleep and some other physiologic parameters like oxygen saturation and heart rate. When you take a kit home, there is a lower number or decreased number of sensors that are basically trying to measure the same things, but sometimes sleep and breathing are measured indirectly through other signals like peripheral artery tone, for instance. So the signals are less complicated, easier to obtain, and therefore hopefully easier for the pilot to do.
So if a pilot is diagnosed with OSA, what can they expect for treatment? Is that still with a CPAP device and a mask?
So the first decision that has to be made is even is treatment necessary, because different levels of sleep apnea may or may not require treatment. If treatment is deemed appropriate, then yes, the main therapy remains CPAP, which seeks to relieve the blockage of the throat, which is the essence of obstructive sleep apnea, with a positive airway pressure applied through some sort of nasal or facial mask. There are other options that we can talk about, but briefly those include oral appliances that thrust the lower jaw forward during sleep, and there are some surgical approaches that seek to open up the upper airway as well.
Okay, and for that oral appliance, I know pilots ask about that every now and then. Is there some type of monitoring or a chip that is in some of these devices so you can measure compliance?
Yes, so some oral appliances can be configured with a chip that will measure adherence more directly, which has always been the benefit of CPAP, that adherence can be monitored closely. But that is also true of oral appliance now as well.
So I know a lot of pilots have a kind of a love-hate relationship with CPAP. Some of them would not trade anything for CPAP, and they get great quality of sleep, and while others just absolutely hate it, and they have a hard time. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, CPAP is an extremely polarizing therapy. There are those that love it, and there are equal number that hate it. We spend a lot of time dealing with the latter group, those that struggle with CPAP. Often that discussion begins with understanding the goals of care. What is the pilot looking for? What are they prioritizing in terms of that treatment experience? If CPAP is deemed the most appropriate option, then we can spend quite a bit of time troubleshooting that experience to make it easier. And that may involve looking at the mask and trying to optimize the fit of that interface. There are many, many styles and options now. Or we may adjust the humidity that will warm and moisten the air to make it less irritating on the nose and throat. And there are also ways that we can adjust the pressure delivery to make that more comfortable. So for instance, when the user tries to exhale, the pressure can be temporarily decreased to make that exhalation force more comfortable to breathe against. So there's a lot of troubleshooting that can be done from the mask to the pressure to help that pilot experience CPAP in a more positive way.
And, you know, many pilots have, you know, it's their career, traveling with a CPAP device. Is that fairly easy? How do they get through the checkpoint?
Yeah, I think it's a cuff half full, cuff half empty type of proposition. Some view that traveling with CPAP is just simply a matter of fact, and it is not a big barrier. For others, bringing the device along, having another piece of carry-on is an issue. CPAP easily goes through TSA at security. Security is very comfortable with CPAP devices and knows them well. For travelers, we generally advise not putting the CPAP in luggage because it will get jostled and may get broken. For the pilot, that's less of a direct concern. Devices now have gotten quite a bit more portable, both in terms of weight and size. And the pilot also should remember that a CPAP can be even more portable or smaller and easier to tote if the heated humidifier option is temporarily left at home, because that actually encompasses about half of the footprint of a CPAP device, and it can be used without the humidifier if so desired.
Recently, we've been seeing more requests for a device called Inspire, which is a pacer device, and the FAA has used this in some different situations. What is the Inspire pacer device?
Yes, the Inspire is an implanted system that's designed to electrically stimulate the tongue to a forward position when you breathe, and thereby prevent the tongue from falling back into the throat and causing that obstructed breathing. When you use a CPAP, you're trying to accomplish the same thing by just simply using air pressure to move that tongue forward.
Okay.
Now, The parts of an Inspire are basically threefold. There's an implanted impulse generator that sits right below the right collarbone. It looks exactly like a cardiac pacemaker, but instead of being implanted on the left side of the chest, it's implanted on the right side of the chest. Coming out from that impulse generator are two leads that are under the skin, so thereby not visible. One sits right up against the rib and detects breathing patterns, and the second electrode or lead is tunneled under the skin of the neck to intersect what's called the hypoglossal nerve in the neck. The hypoglossal nerve is the nerve, when stimulated, causes the tongue to move. And in particular, that lead is attached to those branches of the nerve that, when stimulated, cause the tongue to go forward, like when a snake protrudes its tongue. So when the sensor in the chest detects an inhalation through movement of the chest, it causes the impulse generator to fire and send an electrical charge up to that hypoglossal nerve, thereby moving the tongue forward during inhalation.
Okay, so it sounds like pilots have definitely more than one option to explore if they've been diagnosed with OSA.
The toolkit has definitely gotten broader and deeper, and Inspire is the latest. There are other options coming down the line, including a promising pharmacotherapy, potentially for obstructive sleep apnea. So I expect the toolkit will continue to have more tools in it going forward.
No, that's great. Not every sleep disorder is diagnosed as OSA. Some pilots have been diagnosed with parasomnias. Tell me more about that.
So parasomnias are unwanted motor, that is movement, or vocal events during sleep. And they can occur out of what we call non-REM sleep, which are the non-dreaming stages of sleep, or REM sleep, which is the dreaming stage of sleep. Everyone is familiar with a non-REM parasomnia. That would be sleepwalking, for instance, or sleep talking. One that's probably less well known about would those that come out of REM sleep, particularly one that's called REM behavior disorder, where individuals begin to act out their dreams during sleep. The parasomnias that occur in non-REM sleep often are due to a combination of something that's causing the patient to have a deeper tendency to sleep, like they might be sleep deprived, but while simultaneously there's something that's causing them to arouse from sleep. So you could think of someone who's sleep deprived, but also has sleep apnea. The sleep deprivation is causing the deeper stages, the sleep apnea is causing the arousal. REM parasomnia, like that REM behavior disorder, don't really follow that same pathway and can happen independent of sleep quality or other things going on.
Dr. Olson, is there anything additional you would like to share with pilots, advice for them, maybe sleep hygiene, or if they have a new diagnosis of OSA?
Yeah, I think the big thing that I would like to emphasize is the importance of avoiding sleep deprivation. We know that chronically getting less than 7 hours of sleep on a consistent basis is associated with a variety of long-term health consequences, including premature death. And for an individual in a safety-sensitive situation like a pilot, obtaining adequate sleep duration is probably the number one sleep tip that I can provide and emphasize. I think for the pilot with obstructive sleep apnea, I would like to emphasize that the goal is not to threaten one's ability to do what they love, but rather to find a disorder that, if addressed, will really help optimize health in ways that they might not imagine, like having a positive impact on blood pressure or having a positive impact on their blood sugar control and just how they feel, or the quality of their bed partner's sleep, because that disruptive breathing can influence others around them. So recognizing sleep apnea for kind of a foundational condition that it is, and making sure it's effectively treated to ensure overall well-being and health.
Right. You know, I think a lot of pilots and others don't realize that sleep affects so many things in our lives. As you had mentioned, your bed partner or other health issues that may be related, have this addressed early on. And
we tend to look in the sleep field as sleep being one of those three pillars of health. So we talk about diet and exercise, but sleep should be right up there. It's so foundational to health.
So now that we've heard a little about what exactly obstructive sleep apnea is and how to treat it, let's focus on the aeromedical certification aspects of this condition. Okay, so you're a pilot, and you have finally been convinced to go ahead and go through with a polysomnogram. As you remember, that's a sleep study. You were diagnosed with obstructive sleep apnea. Okay, well, what next? The best recommendation is to be prepared. We suggest that you have your sleep disorder specialist fill out the FAA's initial OSA status report. This is basically a checklist that your provider can run through, complete, sign and date, and you bring it with you to your aviation medical examiner. The form includes items such as the date of your diagnostic sleep study, whether it was a study done at home or in a laboratory, whether or not your primary diagnosis was actually obstructive sleep apnea, or if you had other parasomnias like restless leg syndrome, narcolepsy, or other issues. The form also asks whether or not you have evidence for sleep disruptive restless leg syndrome, whether you experienced periodic limb movements while sleeping, and whether there were any central apneas, meaning episodes where you stop breathing because the breathing centers of the brain are not triggering as appropriate. And this can sometimes happen when obstructive apneas are treated. The form also asks your provider to list your apnea hypopnea index. In other words, the number of apneas, stop breathing episodes, or hypopneas, which are partial stop breathing episodes, that you experience each hour. In addition, the form asks the provider whether or not you have other conditions associated with obstructive sleep apnea, such as atrial fibrillation, congestive heart failure, coronary disease, diabetes, hypertension, obesity, or a prior stroke. The form also asks what recommended treatment would be used, such as CPAP, which would be the most common, BiPAP, which is bidirectional positive airway pressure, or assisted servoventilation. In addition to this, the form asks whether you use any sleep or sedating medications, noting that many of these medications can be disqualifying, and you really should check with your AME before starting those medications. The form also asks the provider to state whether or not you've been compliant with CPAP, such as outlined by the number of days actually utilized, the percentage of days that CPAP was used, and the average time frame in which the device was used as well. The FAA ideally would like to see pilots use their positive airway pressure device at least 75% of each time they put it on an average of about 6 hours per night. Keep in mind that your aviation medical examiner can issue your medical certificate at the time of the flight physical, even if you do not have previously reported obstructive sleep apnea and you're using CPAP. If the AME indicates that you are reporting sleep apnea, you have 90 days to provide all of the supporting data. Sometimes your AME may look at all of the data and identify certain risk factors, such as an elevated body mass index or reported snoring, at which time you should probably reconsider bringing your bed partner to your flight physical. But seriously, in this case, the AME may discuss with you specific risks for obstructive sleep apnea, provide you with some educational material, and will indicate on your medical certificate form, OSA risk educated, and then issue your certificate. If the AME notes that you're at high risk for having obstructive sleep apnea based on certain known risk factors, but have not been diagnosed with the condition, they may indicate this on the application form, and you will then have 90 days to obtain further diagnostics by a sleep disorder specialist, and will need to provide those data to your AME or the FAA directly, but you can still get your flight physical completed that day. It's important to point out that other comorbidities, such as unexplained atrial fibrillation, may prompt the FAA to scrutinize your available data, such as your body mass index or other risk factors, and ultimately compel you to obtain a sleep disorders evaluation, since it's very common to have factors such as sleep apnea triggering atrial arrhythmias. The good news is that only in very rare circumstances, such as a pilot falling asleep in the clinic lobby because of excessive daytime sleepiness or having such severe symptoms that an immediate safety risk would be posed, would a medical application need to be deferred to the FAA and a sleep study be mandated prior to obtaining a medical certificate? The main takeaway is that the FAA has worked hard to streamline the process of obtaining appropriate diagnostics with a sleep disorder specialist and then obtain appropriate treatment. Now, there are pilots who are very adverse to considering being assessed for sleep apnea, but I sort of compare it to breaking your leg and really not wanting to be seen wearing a cast. You can either get appropriate standard of care and take care of the condition correctly or not. You can have a forever limp, or in the case of sleep apnea, have fragmented sleep, excessive daytime sleepiness, annoy your bed partner with snoring and snort arousals, and ultimately cause gradual, subtle, downstream clinical issues such as high blood pressure, increased pressure on the pulmonary arteries going into the lungs, increased risks for heart arrhythmias, stroke, and generally feeling just lousy all the time. You make the call. Thanks for joining us today on the podcast, and we look forward to having you join us on future episodes. Remember that if you encounter a health-related question pertaining to your aeromedical certification, you can reach out to our Clear Approach website at clearapproach.mayoclinic.org for an online consultation. And don't forget to send your comments and suggestions for future podcasts to clearapproach@mayo.edu. Soft landings and make it a great day.